From the hallowed halls of Flood Law, via the Golden Tower of the Fisher Building, this is Behind the Bench on News Talk 760 WJR. With your law expert, Todd Flood. Brought to you by Flood Law. Flood Law, when it matters. Visit floodlaw.com. Now get ready with your legal questions for one of the Great Lakes' leading attorneys by calling 800-859-0957. That's 800-859-0WJR. Now here's your host, Todd Flood.
We're back. Behind the Bench. Going to talk about a lot of things tonight. One of the big things that's hitting the airways, and I can't tell you how many times people have asked me about it in the past 3 weeks, is this new show on Netflix, The Making of a Murder, and how that has kind of changed or opened up some eyes about what may happen in criminal defense cases or prosecutions. And obviously here in the Avery case, where it was clear there was obviously some skullduggery, as my friend Juan Mateo may say, or Gerald Evelyn, there was some skullduggery done by the police department in the prosecution of that first case. And then ultimately later on, he was found guilty in the murder of a photographer that came out to his home. And that is up for question. And a lot of people are talking about it. And I want to take your calls on that tonight. 1-800-859-0WJR, 1-800-859-0957. It's interesting to me how many people out there think that actually the police could cheat, or there could be a motive, a bias, an agenda, believing that they have the right person and they just try to fit the evidence into that that conclusion. How many times have we talked about it where bad police work is the work where the a person comes up with their theory and then just tries to fit the evidence into it, as opposed to take the evidence to where it leads? Don't get me wrong. There's too many great cops to count. There's too many great police officers out there to count. There's the bad ones, just like in every profession and everything we do, when the human factor comes into play. And I want to talk about that. The other issue that comes into play here for us tonight, I want to talk about, and my dear friend and great colleague, someone that I have a great amount of respect for, Roop Raj, talking about from Channel 2, talking about the gun control and picking up. That was one of the topics I wanted to talk about tonight, the gun control as it relates to President Obama placing basically another check and balance on background checks. And is this, you think, an impingement upon your Second Amendment rights? Is this an impingement upon you having the right to bear arms? Or is it something where, you know, we need a different check and balance? I'd like to talk about that. One of the people that is, everyone knows, in Metro Detroit and throughout the state, for that matter, she's been on national news, is going to join us tonight, Judge Vonda Evans. And she's always someone that adds just good old-fashioned common sense to the equation, and someone that's seen it all in Frank Murphy. She's a former prosecutor and now current judge in Frank Murphy in the circuit court down here in Detroit. You have seen her on the Bashar case and several others, the Melendez case with the police officer out of Inkster. She is suffers no fool, obviously, and she is someone that I assure you is going to have an opinion one way or the other as it relates to Obama's gun plan and also the making of a murder. So those are the two major topics I want to talk about tonight. Those, I think, have grabbed the attention. The making of a murder has swept across the country. It reminds me a little bit of basically the podcast of Serial, S-E-R-I-A-L, Serial, where we had the young man out of Washington, D.C., that was convicted of a homicide. And then when you listen to really diving deep into the facts and to the case. A reporter who did it, amazingly so, did a conversational type piece of going in and looking back behind all the aspects of that particular case. So we're going to talk about that. I do want to just mention a couple things. We mentioned it here first, I think, with Behind the Bench. And it was just a matter of time, and that is our friends and family and loved ones up in Flint as it relates to this water emergency. I said it when it came, and I listened to that doctor at Michigan State University who was doing the testing and told the government, gave them notice, and said, hey, listen, you guys have a big problem here, and there's some lead poisoning going on. And I don't know if people were just sleeping at the switch. They didn't think the story to be true. They didn't follow with due diligence. But this is my next prediction. As I predicted earlier, there is going to be some prosecutions in that case. No question in my mind. You watch. There's too much there for someone to have not be held accountable. It will hit the criminal arena. So ultimately, we'll see how that goes and follow it. But Governor Snyder putting the water authority in basically an emergency state. Hopefully they can make things a little bit more, I don't know, accountable and have some answers for people up there looking for the answers. What do they do next? What do I do with my child that has been contaminated with and may suffer for life as it relates to these lead poisoning incidents? So that's something that we'll continue to watch and continue to go on. So here we have it. We have this case out of Wisconsin. And I want to hear your thoughts on it. I want to hear about what, if any of you have seen it. This is a particular case where ultimately a man was convicted on bogus information, and police officers basically having an agenda to put in certain pieces of evidence that didn't necessarily exist, and ultimately him getting convicted. Later on, finding out, hey, listen, he didn't do it, and someone else did, and the evidence didn't match. I think that happens, believe it or not, more times than we want to know. So when we come back, we'll have Judge Vonda Evans on the line, and we'll go at it. Please call in with your questions. I promise you it'll be a great show with Judge Evans, 1-800-859-0WJR. We'll be right back right after this.
You're listening to Behind the Bench, radio's most comprehensive legal forum, where you ask the questions and Todd Flood provides informal counsel. Submit your legal questions at 800-859-0WJR. And get to know Todd Flood at floodlaw.com. Now, here's Todd Flood.
We're back. So, as luck would have it, we received a phone call from the attorney up in Wisconsin who is going to join us next time. He, as a matter of fact, is coming into Detroit in a few weeks. So that'll be exciting. That'll be exciting to have him here in Detroit, and he's going to give some talks, and I would imagine he's going to go to the law schools and work on certain projects, obviously the Innocent Project and the like. I guess ultimately this show may validate the Innocent Project even more. How many people are in prison nowadays that in fact are innocent? And, you know, we do have the case that we're going to talk about with regards to Derek Oliver. Derek Oliver is in prison, and we have enough, we believe, to show that he didn't commit the homicide that he's accused of back in 2008. But you know, I'll give you the anecdotal case of Alicia Hartner and the like, who were accused and charged and put in waiting trial for a whole year of a double homicide. And ultimately it came down to where they were innocent. The killer was out there, a guy that was convicted, Doyle Palmer. And it turned out Alicia Hartner had nothing to do with it. 4 days in custody, ultimately got a false confession, and the DNA evidence showed that she didn't do it. And it came down to one police officer that basically got, as I say, the skullduggery in play and got someone to lie against her. So when the evidence came out, Kim Worthy did the right thing. Judge Worthy dismissed the case. Believe it or not, two years to the date of Christmas Eve. So anyway, it does happen more often than not. So as I said, tonight we have a great guest, someone that is well-respected by her peers and by lawyers throughout the state and throughout, obviously, Wayne County, Judge Vonda Evans. Judge, you with me? Do I have her? Judge, you here?
I'm here.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing well. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. So,
all right now.
I don't know if you got to see one of the topics that we're going to talk about a little bit is this gun control. Roop Raj, a friend of ours, you know Roop, is
very well.
Yeah,
great guy.
Love Roop. He was filling in for Mitch tonight, and he covered this topic, and it was one of those topics where obviously it inflames passions on both sides, but I will tell you, looking at what President Obama does, getting into the heavy minutia of it, but it looks like he wants nothing more than just to cure or fix or see if the background check material is in fact working. That doesn't sound like a new law necessarily, but he's trying to say, hey, listen, I'm not going to impinge upon it. I just want to make sure you're, go to your point a long while ago, we got this, the mental illness issues, and make sure that there's, you know, no one out there. Have you seen any of that? Have you looked at the what President Obama did?
Well, you know what, not really. I'm going to be honest with you. But what I do know is this. I do know the recent incidences of a lot of people, I mean, across the country and even in the city of Detroit. You have guns in the wrong people's hands, you know.
Right.
You have a lot of people who are mentally ill and that they have not had a background check. And unfortunately, that's like adding an accelerant to a fire. You know, I mean, you've got to make sure that people who have guns are legally sane or that are qualified to have them, you know. And so I think that that's something that we need to be able to do. And I don't think that that infringes upon your right to bear arms. It's just making sure that the people that do have the guns have the mental capacity to use them and to be able to judge a situation as a reasonable person would in that situation when using that gun. So I don't think that that's unreasonable in any way, you know.
Right.
At the same time, you know, you look at what's going on in the city of Detroit all around, and you see a lot of people, homeowners, that, hey, have guns. And you know what? One thing my father used to say, I'd rather the police catch me with it than a criminal catch me without it. That's just how people are feeling. And they are, you know, they have these guns, they're in their home, and when people are trying to rob them or take advantage of them, they're using them. And, you know, that's just what's going on, you know. And, I mean, hey, you know, people work hard for what they have. And, you know, I can't be mad at those people for using the guns if somebody breaks into their home who presents then a security breach to them in their home, and they have the right to defend themselves.
You know, I'd be candid with you, and I want to hear your thoughts on it. Realistically, to me, you know as well as I do, the guns that people have that are criminals of just the regular street gang or punk on the street that has a gun didn't go into the shop to get the gun in the first place. 9 times out of 10, that guy got the gun stolen someplace else and got it 3 times removed and over here. I think that's a different case than what everyone is talking about in some regards anyway, not everyone, but people are talking about as it relates to the crazy that goes in and does this sadistic mayhem, shooting up, as it in California, or shooting up a theater, or going into a school. Those guns, those people that collect those guns. Now, well, obviously, that's a different animal or different beast, if you will, to tackle.
And the thing about it is that you can try to prevent against something, but hindsight is 2020.
Right.
But here's the situation: I'd rather have it and not need it than it needed and not have it. And that's what's in place now. There is no psychological assessment of people who, or even background check. But all they look at is whether or not this person has had a criminal conviction. And if they haven't, and they go to a class, they're eligible to get a gun. That is dangerous.
That's crazy.
I mean, how difficult would it be for us to be able to determine whether or not, you know, or just ask the question, and then hopefully they'll be truthful. But there's no way to prevent against that. But at the same time, you know, we are a society that is controlled and influenced by violence. I mean, you look at these video games with our children from the crib on up. You know, children are exposed to violence, and it's always with guns. And America has a fascination with them. I'm not saying that they're not inappropriate all the time. I'm just saying that there is a fascination with guns. You know, you look on Facebook. How many times, I'm going to ask you, Todd,
mm-hmm.
if you had a case where some person is on Facebook or Instagram with a gun and charged with a violent offense, and then they want to say, oh, that's not me. I mean, come on, really?
Right. Well, yes. Have I had it? I mean, they've been so brazen. I had two snitches get up on the stand and go into testimony, and our guys found these two snitches testifying, trying to say innocent as thou, right? Well, here they made YouTube videos of them, the money-blowing bandit with their guns and their money. It beat up the credibility of these two guys. But yes, I mean, have I had clients? Has there been witnesses? Yes, these people that get brazen, crazy, and they brag about it. I don't know. There seems to me, I'm looking at the papers too much. Maybe I should stop looking at these papers so much. But the negative news you see today in today's paper, both the news and the free press, of all the crazy killings. I just saw, you know, the 9-year-old boy who lost his father. And that, through the shooting through the Wendy's, that wasn't your case, was it?
No.
Okay. You know, the.
But I mean, you can go on and on about how violent these situations are.
Right.
And they are very tragic. You know, but the thing about it is what about the person who legitimately has a gun, who may be coming home, someone tried to carjack them, somebody tried to rob them with a gun. I mean, and luckily they do have a gun, or someone breaking into someone's house where you got kids. Those are situations where, you know, those individuals are glad that they have the gun, and that's what the Constitution protects, those kind of people with the right to have a gun. And that's the situation we're looking at, and that's the concern that you have. But like you said, how many times do people break in people's houses, steal guns, and then they get on that black market? I don't know what to do to be able to curb that, but something needs to be done.
I think it's clear that a few things have to happen, and the beauty of, I don't know, you can tell me, you're the one making the determinations on sentencing, but when you have the new case that basically says, the guidelines are advisory to the extent that you don't have to worry about so much of a substantial and compelling reason to go outside or below or above the guidelines.
The thing about it is when you get somebody with a felony firearm, or somebody that has a gun, or some marijuana that's got a gun on them or whatever, you know, that felony firearms are mandatory 2 years, so all of that about the guidelines really is of no moment.
Exactly, for the felony firearm issue. But when you got someone with the CCW, the felony firearm, again, you know what? I know that there are cases with the felony firearm that the guy shouldn't, or the gal shouldn't, go to prison for 2 years because it was an aberration. They had a felony back in the past, and ultimately, you know, they're put into a position and compromised, and the predicate offense is kind of a baloney predicate offense. Let's say it's a CCW, and now all of a sudden it carries with it the felony firearm. So the beauty of it is, it should, anyway, prosecutors should know the difference, you know, between the chicken
blank
and the chicken
soup. Well, you know, the thing that I'm looking at, you know, as a judge and as a citizen is that, you know, physics tells us that matter can only occupy one space at a time. And here's the situation. You have a lot of people who are going to prison with these gun cases, felony firearms. Guess what? Somebody's going to have to be early released, and God forbid it's somebody who has committed a violent crime. That's my concern.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
We see it all too
judge,
often.
I'm cognizant of that. You know what I'm saying?
Right, right.
I'm not saying that that's an excuse or you get a free run because you get a gun. I'm saying let's get the people off the street that are violent, that are committing these real heinous crimes, and let's make sure that they don't get back out. But, you know, you can't have it both ways. So that's something that we definitely, as lawyers, judges, we have to look at. You know, who do we want to spend our time really incarcerating? People who have just, you know, possessed these guns and have an underlying offense, which the legislature says they should go to prison, where somebody's out here killing and raping our children. And that's really a concern that I see, you know, when you see so many of these people that are been sent to prison, but paroled early because they do wonderful, and when they're incarcerated and they're back out on the street, and because they're institutionalized, they're out here raping children and sexually assaulting them.
Right.
It's ridiculous.
It is, you know? Well, listen, 1-800-859-0WJR. We have one of the best judges in town on the air tonight, and it's an honor and privilege to have Judge Vonda Evans with us. So you have questions, bring them. 1-800-859-0957. Hey, Judge, let me ask you this. Have you watched any of this stuff while we have you on the air tonight? Have you watched any of this, the making of a murderer on Netflix? You got Netflix?
No, listen, you know what? It's a long story, but I'll give your listeners, like, this weird reason I don't watch TV. You know, about 6 years, 5 years ago, I had this case, and it was a serial rapist, and he was killing people, too, murderer, and his name was Shelley Brooks. And I said, I saw it on TV, and I said, I got the case. And after that, I said, you know what, I'm not going to watch TV anymore. So about 2012, I said, you know what, that's so stupid.
Yeah.
I'm going to watch, you know, I mean, come on, for real. 2012, I got every big case that was on media. So guess what happened in 2014? I don't watch TV anymore. I went from going to get the Hamtramck young man to Joe Gibbs and top it off with Big Bob Bashira. Well, guess what? I don't watch TV anymore because I'm sticking to my reason. I don't want them to come in my courtroom. No, I've had a fantastic run, but, you know, I want to give some of my other colleagues an opportunity to be on TV. So for your question, no, I haven't watched Netflix, but tell me about it.
I will. We're gonna cover it right when we get back, right after this.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
Call in to hear the judge and talk with the judge, 1-800-859-0WJR.
You're listening to Behind the Bench, radio's most comprehensive legal forum, where you ask the questions and Todd Flood provides informal counsel. Submit your legal questions at 800-859-0WJR. And get to know Todd Flood at floodlaw.com. Now, here's Todd Flood.
We're back. We have with us one of the best judges in the state. Truly someone that has been put in the spotlight and has hit it out of the park to most, if not all, legal experts as it relates to several of her cases that came before her. Bob Bashira, you had the Melendez case that just came here. We're with Judge Vonda Evans. Judge, I see someone's calling in wanting to talk to you. I'm not sure. I haven't looked at the whole screen. I think it's someone that wants to talk about guns. Mark, you with me?
Right.
Hey,
yes,
Mark,
sir, I am.
Mark, you got the judge. He wants to know how you're doing.
I am wonderful. I think you are a fabulous, no-nonsense judge, and I just want to tell you that. I love you, and I appreciate you. I haven't had to go before you, but I think you are no-nonsense, and I think that's what we need sometime. But, Judge, I want to ask you, if possible, what can we do to put something on a book, kind of like a 7411 or something, where people that have had issues on their in their past that they don't have to go through to get things taken off, because it seems like that's in my line of work, that's a big hindrance for people from 10, 20 years ago that have had old charges and old cases?
That's a great question, Mark.
Let me just say this to you. What it is it's called now that you don't have to check the box. And many people are realizing, legislatures and employers, you know what? It's a lot of wasted talent out here because people made dumb mistakes when they're young. You know what I'm saying? Let me just say this to you. You know, my belief is as they always say, you know, in the Bible, that a righteous man will fall down 7 times, and that's when you're doing everything you're supposed to. So what will you do? We penalize them for making a dumb mistake when they're young? Hey, we don't need to do that. We're wasting talent, and we need to make sure that we let our legislatures know, and we let people know, especially the legislature, we need to change the law. We need to be able to say if somebody has had an opportunity of 1 or 2 or 3 offenses, and there's a substantial period of time that has passed, and they've shown that they're doing something positive, and they made a dumb, stupid mistake, and they pay their time for that, then they need to be excused from that. There's too much talent that's wasted. You know, I just want to share this with you, Mark. It was so sad. There's a young man, a young lady that I went to school with. Her brother is a skilled carpenter. Skilled. He comes in early. He's supposed to be there at 7. He comes in at 6. As soon as they find out he's got a conviction from 19 years ago, 2 convictions, because it can't be expunged, they let him go. He's attempted suicide 2 times. That's wrong. That's not right. We need to change that. And we need to let our legislators know, hey, change the law. It's an old law. And you know what? At this point, it's outdated. And this is why I'm saying this to you, Mark. You can be stopped in a car with, say, a gun, and maybe there is something, some marijuana in the car, and maybe somebody, I don't know, left a stolen something. Because it looks at the same transaction occurrence, then you're charged 3 different charges out of 1 situation. And guess what? You're stuck. You can't do anything. And we need to change that law.
You know, this is remedial to me in the sense, you're absolutely right, 100%. We let kids that are between the ages of 17 and 24 get away with a thing called HYDTA, the Homes Youthful Trainee Act, under certain crimes. And then when we basically, Senator Holmes, a beautiful senator that ultimately comes up with that legislation with a lot of foresight, the kid just made a dumb mistake. But there are the situations where you're past that date, you have a family, you're stressed, you do something stupid as it relates to some crime of retail fraud where you steal something, food or the like, or you're trying to put ends meet. Ultimately, what happens is we don't have a HYDTA program for someone that is in that position, the older person that has this, you know, the equity of doing it. Yeah, bring it. I want to hear it.
Let me just say this to you, which is really bad.
Yeah.
Say, for instance, I'm 25. I do something dumb. You know what I'm saying? I get placed on probation. Guess what? I decide I'm going to change my life. I want to go back to school. I want to get a federal loan or grant.
There you go.
I can't.
Right.
So basically, what we're doing is we're saying we're penalizing these people after they pay their debt to the society. And if you ever called anything double jeopardy, it ought to be that. These people are penalized, and it shouldn't be that way. And we need to put pressure on our legislators to change the law. But right now, they do have something that are requiring people not to check the box if they have a felony conviction. Because guess what? Employers are realizing we're losing quality people out here, people that want to work. Because why? Something that has happened in the past. And so I'm all for it, Mark. Thanks so much for believing in me, because I believe in our city and I believe in our country.
Thanks for calling in, Mark. Judge, we have someone else that wants to talk with you. I'm not sure.
Talk to me or take a jab at me.
Yeah, someone. I'm not quite sure because my screen here, I'm not technical seven.
Well, guess what, Todd?
Yeah.
Guess what?
He's coming
up.
Let's bring it. So we have Anthony. Anthony, you with me?
Yes, good evening. Good. I appreciate y'all guys being there.
I appreciate you, Anthony. You got one of the best judges in town, Vonda Evans. What's your question?
Well, it's a federal level type of a legal question.
Sure.
With this thing going on in Oregon, Oregon with this militia group taking over federal land, and they also are armed with assault weapons and that alike, and it's been going on for like 5 days.
You broke up on me right there. It's been going on for how long?
Okay. 5 days. Any laws is being broken because the sheriff there, they said, well, won't you guys just go on, pack up, and go home? So if any laws been broken, and this is part of this, I don't know if y'all familiar with Cliveland Bundy, that was in Nevada. He was grazing his cows.
Wait a minute, hold on for a minute. You're saying that there's a militia group that's occupying land and basically sounds like some trespass something or whatever, and is there a federal violation? Is that your question?
Being broken because, again, just let me repeat it, the sheriff over that area there, the jurisdiction, the sheriff said, well, won't you guys just go home?
There's a standoff going on right now. Is that what you're talking about, the standoff that's out in, the wildlife refugees in Oregon, and this is where armed militia are occupying the eastern portion of, I'm not sure of where it's at. It's a Melhor.
I think that's in Burns.
Burns. Marion County Sheriff. Yeah, is out there, and ultimately, it's kind of a stand down of power. So, yeah, you know what?
It really depends. So, first of all, do they have a right to be there? Okay, number one. You know, I'm quite sure if there had been any laws broken, they would move in on them. But, you know, basically, they may have a right to be where they are. They have a right to a First Amendment right of association. The fact that it's not something that's pleasing to other people does not vitiate or cut down their rights. You know what I'm saying? You know, that's what makes America great. You have a right to not like what I do, but we still have a right to respect each other, and a law has to do that. So I don't know if there's anything that any law has been broken as of such, you know, with them being where they are, because they do have a First Amendment right to associate in the congregation.
Well, in this particular situation, if I understand it, tell me if I'm wrong, but as I read it and briefly and between, is basically this militia group is trying to stand up for the rights of others. Is that what you're talking? And the judges, as I see it, I'm in agreement with the judge. You know, they have a right if they're in a place that they're not violating a law. And they have a right to their First Amendment freedom of speech, then, and they're peaceful. They're peaceful. They're not causing a riot. I don't see the law being broken, but I don't know all the details of that case.
Right. See, the thing about it is that the law talks about, and you remember this, Todd, time, place, manner.
You
can regulate time, place, manner.
Right.
But there are certain places that, by the nature of them, a person has a right to associate and congregate, even if you disagree with their viewpoint. They still have that right.
Look at what happened in Dearborn with the guy that did the case of basically it was an anti-Muslim, sadistic, crazy guy. He stands out in front of Dearborn court, and ultimately he got out of that situation for that very argument. What, you had another question? I apologize. I didn't want to step on you.
That's all right. So, let me ask this. Some of the same people that's occupying the standoff, one of the guys' name is Bundy, and his father's name is Cliveland Bundy. His two brothers, that's in Oregon now, they're Bundys, and their father is Cliveland Bundy. In 2014, in Nevada, the Federal Land Authority, whoever regulate the land, grazing land, where ranchers are allowed to graze their cattle on federal land, their livestock on federal land, and they pay a nominal fee. And the federal government can't claim that this rancher, Clive M. Bundy, owed like $1 million in grazing fees. And he said he refused to pay it. You know, they had some court action against him. But,
okay, look, that's not a reason that they can go in and arrest him.
Let me finish. It was a standoff there as well. They stayed on the land. Some more militia groups came there. But the difference was, because they played it, it was on in live TV, they was pointing assault weapons at the federal officers or whatever they are, you know.
That's a problem.
The title of it.
Sure.
Well, that's a violation of the law.
That's crazy. Yeah.
All right. So, well, if they're doing that, they ought to go in there and arrest them. If they don't want to, I don't know what's going on. But they don't have a right to point a gun
It's a double standard. That's what's going on.
Well, listen, the government, first of all, if the government says you owe them money, my advice to the whoever that is in the world out there, ultimately, you hire the right professional, but you got to pay the do-re-mi. Second thing is, and the judge hits the nail on the head, anytime you point a gun at somebody and you don't have a legitimate reason, there's a problem. That's an assault. And it's a felonious assault because it's done, you know, you're pointing this gun at somebody. That's an arrestable offense. So, seriously, Anthony, that's great questions. I'm glad you called in to talk to the judge and have questions.
And thanks, Anthony. You're so informative.
Yeah, for sure. So, Judge, albeit you don't watch TV, and I get it. I mean, at the end of the day, I know you and how great of a mom you are and follow. You have two full-time jobs, and obviously number one, making sure your kids are great, and you probably don't have a lot of time to watch TV anyway. But at the end of the day, this case about making a murderer, Steve Avery, gets convicted for rape and assault with intent to murder. Ultimately, it comes out that the evidence against him in that particular case, it didn't match, wasn't him. And after 18 years, they showed that.
Let me ask this question to you. When you say the evidence doesn't match, was it DNA?
DNA. Yeah, DNA.
Okay.
And you could see, as I call it, the sanding was going on with witnesses. And you know when that happens, when someone comes up in front of you and they testify and it doesn't sound like them, doesn't sound like the words they would use, and it's they're coached. Obviously, that took place in that case. But Chapter 2 comes along. Chapter 2 comes along, and you have Stephen Avery, who they own a tow yard and basically a car area in Wisconsin in this rural area. And he calls the Auto Trader photographer out to the house, and she comes up missing and is dead. And the police.
This is a photographer?
Yeah, the photographer got killed. And because of the cheating in the first trial, and the police had the motives and the agendas and the like, there was the big question. He was convicted of that murder.
Okay.
And this question.
Is this the guy that, wait a minute, hold on for a minute. Is this the Auto Trader guy?
Yep, this is the Auto Trader. The guy that was convicted of the rape, who found innocent, is convicted later on of the murder, okay, of the girl that was coming up.
Same woman?
Nope, different woman. Different woman.
Okay.
Altogether
okay.
Different. But the question for the listeners out there, 1-800-859-0WJR, and I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit, Judge. How often? Well, let me ask you, I'll just sit down the middle. You think there's innocent people in prison?
I definitely do believe that.
And
guess what?
What?
There are guilty people on the street.
Well, for sure. I'm not asking about the guilty people, of course. I'm not talking about that.
People walk in the street every day.
All right, I'm going to go to my second question, though.
Wait a minute. Unfortunately, it goes to, who they like the best. And if you have a defense attorney that is a little bit more prepared, more skilled than a prosecutor who's new with an amount of evidence that they can't properly present, guess what? That guilty guy goes free. Do I believe that
there are
innocent people in prison?
Absolutely. All right, okay, so now the follow-up question. Do you think there's innocent people in prison because of cheating by the police?
You know what?
Yeah.
Let me say this to you. I don't want to believe that.
I don't either.
I want to believe that every person that's doing their job is doing it right. Now, let me just say this to you. As far as what you're claiming to be as if an attorney,
I'm just asking,
worth anything, sees a witness on a stand using language that seems and they let it get by, shame on them. But let's talk about this, Todd.
Mm-hmm.
How many people are going in a court representing people, and if the judge leans on them a little bit, they cower down to the judge because they want to continue to get work from them, and so they're not as zealous as advocate as they should be for their client. How often does that happen? How often does it happen where lawyers just don't give a damn? And they're just in there, and they're running through those clients, and they're just like
anything else. Just like anything else, just as it is with judges that do it, just as it is with police or prosecutors.
Like anybody.
And it's like we anything else. In human nature, someone wants to what? You know, you get somebody out there that doesn't really care.
But here's a situation where, you know, and the police, I can say in Detroit,
right,
we got a lot of crime going on. And they have to manufacture crime. I don't think we got to do that here.
No, it happens, though. It happens, unfortunately.
I do believe that in some situations, it does occur.
Sure.
You've got good, in any occupation.
Sure.
You have people who are going to do a good job and people who don't care.
You ever see anything that you in your years as a prosecutor or as a judge where you scratch your head and said, hey, listen, guys, you got to go back to the drawing board on this. There's something.
Absolutely not. You know why? Because I've got to believe in that jury system. Are there situations that I would have probably rendered a different verdict? Absolutely. And a jury may have convinced, but I can't sit as that 13th juror. And I have to respect their decision. And although I may have rendered a different decision because of my experience, I can't invalidate what they decide. And that's just how it is. Yeah, have I sat there many times? And I'm surprised.
It's both ways, though, right? So, I mean, there's been cases where you and I don't know what year it was, but I tried a significant case in front of you. I can't even remember.
It was a homicide case. It was a homicide case.
Yeah, I walked the guy, found not guilty. But
and
I remember
that. He killed somebody. And he killed somebody.
Right.
But
right.
The jury found self-defense. That there was self-defense.
Right. Shot through the door. I can't remember. I think
okay,
shot through
the door. Okay, so very good. So I think I know one thing, that family, the victim's family wasn't happy about that. So if you ask that victim, were there guilty people that are walking the street, that victim's family is going to say, damn straight.
Well, you got to love, as you say, unfortunately, it's a jury system.
We have to love and we have to respect this system.
That's right.
This is the best system in the world. Yeah, there are problems that we have here. It's the best system in the world because it's a system by the people, for the people. And I love it. And I'm going to tell you this. I have not been disappointed. I'm disappointed about maybe or surprised at the outcome, but never disappointed in the concept and the people coming together, crying, but coming up with a decision. That, I'm going to tell you, that's touching. When you see somebody from the far east side of Detroit with maybe, some college, and you see somebody from a different part all come together, one together. And they make decisions, and I'll say, wow, I don't agree with it, but you came together, and I appreciate that. And that is democracy at work, and I love it.
Amen.
That is the truth,
and that's the way, why you're one of the best judges around. You have a passion. I hear it in your voice.
You know what? I don't care.
I don't go in front of you. I send Vince.
I got to watch you. I'll look up, and next week you got a case up in front of me.
When?
Nice things I said to you.
Oh, come on now.
So you got something coming up before me?
No, I'll send Vince if I do. But anyway, I don't. Listen, I wouldn't do that.
Thanks so much for having me on your show.
Judge, seriously, you got a passion. You got to stay doing what you're doing. You are truly a great judge, and I love your passion for it.
Oh, thank you so much, Todd.
All right.
Oh, by the way, I just want your listeners to know, Todd used to be my prosecutor.
Yes, that's true. Good hearing your voice.
All right.
So, listen, that hour flew by, and truly it was a great blessing to have Judge Vonda Evans on. We are going to have the lead attorney that came in the case for Stephen Avery. We're going to tape him when he comes in to Detroit in a couple weeks. And we look forward to coming back with you with Behind the Bench.